I think other people are introducing themselves. My name is Sheldon Oberman, and I'm from Winnipeg. I'm an author, I'm a storyteller, I'm a teacher. And I'm very happy to be here at this wonderful festival. Excuse this little Mickey Mouse tail. It's another technical thing that separates and joins me to you. What I want to talk about today, I want to tell some stories. And I want to tell stories that work hopefully both for adults and children, because it's really my feeling that a good story has got a level where everybody of every age can find something important. And so I've chosen some stories that I hope will reach you as they've reached me. And the center of this, I've called this show Tales Along the Fringe, and I introduce it with a simple statement. And the statement is this: there's no such thing as a small miracle. And I hope that these stories are the kinds of miracles that are also not small. The first story I want to tell you is a story that became a book. It's a story some of you may already be familiar with. It's called The Always Prayer Shawl. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, the Always Prayer Shawl, to tell you the background of this story, is it happened to me, it came to me when I was giving my son, along with my wife, his bar mitzvah. And it became a very important thing for me to bring every member of my family there. And you know there are some members you can't, they're dead, they're gone, and you can't bring them. How do you bring those people? How do you introduce people you love to people you love who aren't alive anymore? Well, there's very few ways we can do it. We can only do it through pictures, images, through stories, words. And so being a writer, that's what I needed to do. I needed to tell the story of my grandfather so he could be there. So he could be there in the story. And so he could be there in something else, his prayer shawl, because that's the prayer shawl that he left me. It's a beautiful object to me. He left it to me when I was about 12. He died and left it to me. And I didn't have a bar mitzvah, so I wasn't interested. Didn't care about that stuff. Of course, when I got old enough, had my own son, you better believe he had one. But my grandfather's talis came to me as I was preparing for that bar mitzvah. I found it again in a drawer. And that's when the memories of my grandfather came. And I needed my son, my son and daughter, my whole family, to have him there at that bar mitzvah. And in showing it and in wearing it for the first time, it was a very special moment. And finally, after that, as one of the gifts I could give to my son, I gave the gift of a story. As I'm sure you have given gifts of stories to those people you care about, because they're part of you. So I'd like to tell you the story of, first, the Always Prayer Shawl. And just to give a sense of how this will work, I'd like to tell four stories. And if you have to leave, that's perfectly all right. But try to leave between the stories. After that, I'll be at a table signing books, whatever. So let's go with the first story. And that's the story called The Always Prayer Shawl. And it's a story about my grandfather, Adam. Adam was a Jewish boy in Russia many years ago. Now, when Adam wanted eggs, he didn't go to a store. There were no stores. Adam went to the chicken. And when Adam wanted heat, well, he didn't turn up a dial. He chopped wood for a fire. And when Adam went to town, it wasn't in a car. It was in a wagon pulled by a horse. Yes, by a horse. And he didn't go to a fancy school. He went to his grandfather's home. That's where he and all the children in the village learned how to speak Hebrew and learned all the stories of their people. Now, all of this was special, but the most special thing of all was Adam's name. One day, One day, Adam asked his grandfather, Zeta, why is my name Adam? Zeta, he rubbed his beard, he smiled. He took him to the synagogue. They sat by the window, and they felt the warm sun shining on their faces. And then the grandfather answered, he said, You are named Adam after my grandfather, whose name was Adam. And he was named Adam after his grandfather's grandfather, whose name was Adam. You see, that way there will always be an Adam. Well, Adam laughed. He whispered into his grandfather's ear, I am always Adam. That won't change. Ah, said his grandfather, some things change, some things don't. Then many things began to change in Russia. There wasn't enough food and people were going hungry. There were soldiers fighting everywhere and everyone was afraid. And Adam's parents said, we have to leave our home. We have to go so far away we can never come back. And Adam's grandfather said, you must leave without me. I am too old to change any longer. And Adam cried out. He said, Zeta, if I leave you, I'm never going to see you again. And the grandfather took out his prayer shawl. And he folded it. And he said, this is my prayer shawl, but before that, it was my grandfather's, whose name was Adam, just like you. And now it is yours. Adam held the shawl so tightly he could hardly speak for the tears. So instead he whispered, I am always Adam. And this is my always prayer shawl. That won't change. And off they went. And they traveled for weeks until they came to the sea. They boarded a ship and they sailed for weeks until they came to this new country where everyone spoke a different language and everyone wore different clothes and Adam and his parents had to live in a small apartment in this big city. And his parents had to work in factories and he had to go to a big school to learn history and English and science and everything felt different. Everything but the shawl. Every Saturday, Adam would take out the shawl. And he would put it on. And he would say, This is my always prayer shawl. And I am always Adam. And that won't change. Well, other things changed. Adam grew up and he got married. He went to work in a store from morning till night, every day, except on Saturday. On Saturday, he would put on his shawl, and he would say, this is my always prayer shawl. Until finally, the tzitzit, the fringes, they wore off, and he had to tie on new fringes. Well, things kept changing. Adam and his wife had children. They moved out of the center of the city. They went to the suburbs, and every day Adam would drive back and forth to work in an office. But still, on Saturdays, the always prayer shawl. Until the collar became so worn, he had to sew on a new collar. Wow, things keep changing. The children grew up. They moved out. They got married. They had children of their own. And Adam and his wife grew so very old, they went to live in a home for old people. But still, every Saturday, the always prayer shawl, until the cloth itself, yes, the cloth itself became so worn, he had to sew on a new cloth. One day, Adam's grandson came to visit. And the grandson says, so like grandpa, so come on, were you ever a kid like me, huh? And Adam rubs his beard. It's a beard now. And he says, Yeah, I was like you. And I wasn't like you. You know, when I wanted eggs, I didn't go to a store. I went to the chicken. And when I wanted heat, I didn't turn a dial. I chopped wood for a fire. And when we went to town, it wasn't in a car. It was in a wagon pulled by a horse. And I didn't go to a fancy school like you. I went to my grandfather's house. He taught me everything. The grandson asks, okay, so what did he teach you? What did he teach me? You put this on, You put this on and maybe I can teach you one thing that he taught me. The grandson puts on the prayer shawl and they go to the synagogue. They sit by the window and they shut their eyes to feel the warm sun shining on their faces. And then Adam speaks. He says, you see this shawl? It's my shawl. Before it was mine, it was my grandfather's. And before it was my grandfather's, it was his grandfather's, whose name was Adam, just like me. And someday I'm going to give this to you. So I want you to understand something. You see the fringes? They've changed. You see the collar? The collar's changed. And the cloth? Yes, even the cloth has changed. Everything about this prayer shawl has changed. But you know what? It's still my always prayer shawl. See, it's like me. I have changed, and I have changed, and I have changed, but I'm still Adam. The grandson laughs. He whispers into his grandfather's ear, someday I'm going to be just like you, you know, and I'm going to have a grandson, and his name's going to be Adam. I'm going to give him this always prayer shawl. Ah, says Adam, now I can teach you something that my grandfather taught me. He taught me that some things change and some things don't. That's the story of the always prayer shawl. I have another prayer shawl story. Oh, thank you for waiting and coming between the stories. It helps. It helps me and everyone else. I have another story I'd like to tell you about prayer shawls. Because after I tell these stories, other people come to me. They tell me stories. And then, of course, I read them. And I started reading a lot of Jewish traditional tales. I tell Jewish traditional tales. I teach people how to tell them. It's become something I love to do. This story is a very old story. I actually put it in a play. I turned the Always Prayer Shawl into a play. It was at Ashkenaz a couple years ago, called the Always Prayer Shawl. When I was writing the play, I needed a story within that the grandfather tells his grandson. And this is the story, a prayer shawl story that he tells. It was an odd story to find because I don't know where I found it. I read so many volumes of books, and then one day, waking up from a nap, I remembered the story, and I could never find its source. But here it is anyway. It's a story I call, and I know that it came, it's been in the family for years, about 2000. I know that it came from an Egyptian Jewish community about 200 AD. So it's been a long time. Mystical tale. I call it The Old Wise Man and the Young Wise Guy. Or the story of the dream teacher. And this is how it goes. There was a young man, and he wanted to know everything, and he wanted to know it all at once. So he went here to one teacher, and there to another teacher, and at one school and another school, and he learned a little bit of this, he learned a little bit of that. Then he found out about some teacher who was so smart, He could teach you even if you were asleep. Not asleep, that's pretty good. I'm going to find this guy. And he tracks the old fella down. Finds him about 5 miles out of Yahupitz. He finally gets there, and he comes to the home, and it's a mud shack. It's just mud and a shack, and what, you know, he's so smart. How come he ain't rich? He's going to decide to talk to him anyway. He's about to knock on the door, but it's not a door. It's a cloth. It's just a cloth. There's not even a door there. So he shouts in. He says, "Hey! Hey, old guy! Hey, I hear you're pretty smart." He hears a kind of shuffling. And the old man looks out and says, "Smart? Sometimes I think I'm smart. What do I know?" "Well," says the young fella, "tell me something new." "New? I'm an old man. Everything I know is old." "Look, I've got an hour," says the young man. "Tell you what, I got an hour. Give me your best shot." "An hour? Well, an hour," says the old man, "an hour is a long time for a man with no patience. So you come in." Comes in, it's just an empty room with a mud floor. And the old man says, "Let's sit on this floor, and for 1 hour, for your 1 hour, we will think about what changes and what doesn't change." Well, you can imagine, he's a young man, he's sitting there on the floor. What changes, doesn't change, it changes and it doesn't change. 40 minutes goes by, 50 minutes, 55 minutes, the guy, 59 minutes, that's it. "I've learned nothing." The old man says, "Well, at least you've learned where the door is." "Yeah, that's right, thanks for nothing." He goes out, he pushes his way through the door, but somehow he gets entangled in the cloth. It tangles him up, and he starts to fight it. And the more he fights it, the more tangled it becomes, and he starts to fall. He falls and falls, and he is falling, and he falls into a river. A river, there was no river there before. He falls into the river, and the shawl, the cloth is wrapped around him. He thinks he's going to drown. Instead, it holds him up as the river carries him to the sea. He reaches the sea, and for days, he's floating in the sea until he sees a ship, a pirate ship. The pirate ship takes him up, decides he will become a pirate too. They force him into that kind of work, and he does it. He does it for years until he cannot take it anymore. He knows it's wrong, and he escapes. He escapes that ship, even still with the cloth around his waist, which has become a pirate's sash. He jumps overboard, and he ends up on the shore of a desert. And he takes the cloth off, and he wraps it around himself as the Bedouin would, to protect themselves from the sun and the sand. And then he meets the Bedouin, he joins them, and he becomes a chieftain of a Bedouin band. He marries a Bedouin princess, and he lives for years with them, until finally he is an old man. And the cloth keeps him warm as he sits beside the oasis, staring into the calm water and watching his grandson play. Until one moment, something terrible happens. The grandson falls into the water and yells to his grandfather, "Help! Help!" He's sinking in the water, and the grandfather, old and spindly, just reaching out, manages to pull the child out, but he falls in. And he's so weak, he can't pull himself out. Instead, he sinks. He is sinking and sinking, and the darkness becomes deeper and deeper, and the darkness overwhelms him until, with his last breath choking, he seems to see a light far away coming closer, as if it is a face coming closer, the face being a light, smiling and saying, there, you'll be okay, you'll be okay. And it's the face of the old man, the old dream teacher. And suddenly, he's not in the water anymore. He's on the floor. He's on the floor of the mud hut. He's saying, "What happened? What happened?" And the old dream teacher is standing over him saying, a dream, taking the cloth off him as if it's a dry cocoon, unwrapping him, saying, "A dream, I just gave you a dream, but I thought I lived a lifetime." That's how it is. says the old dream teacher. You can live a lifetime. You learn a bit of this. You learn a bit of that. And at the end, you're lying on your back saying, "What happened? What happened?" The young man stands up and says, but, will you be my teacher? Will you teach me what you know? You want this? This is magic. These are tricks. This isn't real knowledge. I've only done this to get your attention. My attention. Looking deeply into the dream teacher's eyes, he says, if you will teach me, I will be your student as long as you wish me. I will not leave you. And so the teacher takes the cloth that the young man was wrapped in, and he covers his shoulders, and he began to teach him the wisdom of his people. The next story I'd like to tell you is a story that I have just written, and it's come out as a book. In fact, it's not quite out as a book. Just today, I think it's coming out as a book officially, I suppose. It's a funny thing, turning a story into a book and then needing to take that story and turn it back into a story. I've worked on it for 5 years. It's a story of Hanukkah. But that story of Hanukkah, has gone through so many generations of life. It began when I was asked to tell a Hanukkah story, and because I give workshops in storytelling, I started to remember some of the wonderful stories that I had heard, not just about Hanukkah, but stories about families, because I wanted a story that gave us the sense of a family. Because that's how this story has to be shared. It needs to be shared in a family. And I started to remember stories that people had told in my workshops. There were some fascinating ones. One I remember was a story of a woman who lived in an apartment block, Jewish lady, and she crossed the hall to visit her neighbor occasionally, who was a Spanish woman. And one day she noticed in the Spanish woman's home something that looked very much like a Hanukkah. The woman didn't know what it was. It had been in her family, not just for years. It had been in her family for centuries. Well, most of you know the rest of the story already. That woman, that Spanish woman, slowly started to understand that she was a Marano, that she came from the descendants of Jews who had been hidden since 1492, and that Hanukkah was a religious Jewish object. And the change that came over that woman, we can only imagine, as she starts to make sense of her own grandparents and parents' strange rituals and superstitions and secretive behavior. Another wonderful story I've been told was a story of a chaplain in the army in World War II. And he set himself to collecting broken pieces of stained glass from bombed-out churches as they were advancing towards Germany. In fact, he had another man helping him who happened to be Jewish. The chaplain was killed on one of those missions. And the Jewish soldier, kept up the work, going whenever he could to bombed out churches, saving up these pieces of glass, until finally a window could be made of them, a window in the chaplain's hometown, in memory of that man. There were other stories like that. A story one of my students brought to me, because I'm also a high school teacher, teaching at Joseph Galinsky, a Jewish school in Winnipeg. And this story was quite moving for me. The boy's grandfather had come from Buchenwald. And I won't tell you the fullness of that story. There's times for it. This may not be quite the place, so I'll just tell it to you in short. In the despair of that man coming there and walking towards Poland, where his family, he hoped but also knew, would not be, as he walked towards Poland and out of Germany, he would stop to get water, whatever he could, and he stopped at a person's home. And he asked for water, and she let him in, not knowing he was a Jew. And as he waited to be given the water, he noticed something on a table. A tablecloth? No, it wasn't a tablecloth. It was a talus that was being used for a tablecloth. And he asked the woman, "What is that?" And she didn't know. Just something her son, who, you know, was an officer in the army, brought back, always bringing him back wonderful, odd gifts. Well, he managed to get back that talus. I don't know what he gave her. She didn't think it was worth very much, of course. And in receiving that back, and in putting that on, he got back his life. He got back his identity. A man who felt like he was nothing anymore, just a ghost. A ghost, suddenly, with the physical power of that talus around him, felt real again and knew who he was. He had rescued the shawl. The shawl had rescued him. All of these wonderful stories, and others, of course, they somehow coalesced as I tried to write this story, tried to create the story of Hanukkah, a story of Hanukkah. And so I'd like to tell you this story of Hanukkah. I'd like also to apologize because I'm in transition myself. I spent 5 years turning a story in my mind into words. It became words, it became a thing on the page, and now that it's published and it's just coming out, I'm trying to pull myself out of it to make it a living oral story again. So I'm going to go over here with the book and just have it by me as a bit of a security because I don't want to lose my place. And it's not that I don't intellectually know it, but what happens in a process is the emotions sometimes overwhelm, and then I lose myself. And I'm still a little too emotionally close to the story to feel that I can tell that story. So I'm going to have it with me. And I apologize to the true storytellers who would be a little scandalized by this. And this is the story by the Hanukkah light. Rachel loves Hanukkah at her grandparents' home. She loves her grandma and grandpa's warm hugs and kisses. She loves the smell of potato latkes frying in the kitchen. She loves the sweet taste of applesauce as it's spooned out of the jar. She loves helping grandpa clean the Hanukkah. Ah, it's a silver candle holder shaped like a tree guarded by a lion that stands at the roots. The roots hold a tree trunk, a thick, knotted tree trunk, and the tree trunk hold 9 silver branches, heavy silver branches, and the branches hold nests, 9 silver nests, and the nests are for candles, 9 colored candles, and the candles are for lighting on each night of Hanukkah. Rachel spreads newspapers under the Hanukkah, and Zeta, he dabs polish on 2 strips of cloth. "What part should we clean first?" Zeta asks. "Should we start with the lion, or maybe the roots, or the trunk, or the branches, or the nests?" "Zeta," Rachel answers, "we always start with the roots, and we work our way up to the branches. That's what we do every year." "Oh," says Zeta, "that's right. You start at the bottom, you work up to the top." "Okay." They rub and they polish until that whole candle holder is shining, and Rachel whispers, "It's like a tree. It's like a tree that's made of moonlight." And Grandpa smiles and says, "Yes, it's ready now. And now we can celebrate Hanukkah." Rachel and Jacob call the family together. Grandma turns off the lights all through the house. Jacob lights the shamash candle and gives it to Rachel. Rachel takes the candle and says the blessings and then lights the first candle of Hanukkah, and they all say amen. "Now tell us the story," they ask Zeta. "Tell us the story the way you do every year." And Grandpa looks at the light of the old Hanukkah and he says, "I remember when I was a boy, I was the one who sang the blessings and lit the first candle. And then my grandfather told me the story of how Hanukkah began." And so the family grows quiet, and they sit close and they listen as the grandfather tells them the story that he'd heard so long ago. 2,000 years ago, our people lived in the promised land, and we had a great temple lit by a great lamp. And then a foreign king came with an army of soldiers, and he wanted us all to pray to his gods. And he took pigs into the temple, and he set up stone idols, and he tore down our lamp and he put out its light. Well, one family stood against him. They were called Maccabees, and they showed all the people how to fight to be free. And the people kept fighting year after year until finally we defeated that man and his army. And we cleared out the pigs. And we took out the idols. And we cleaned the great temple and we set up the lamp for everyone to see. But the lamp had only enough oil to burn for one day. It would take 8 more days for enough oil to be made. And the people cried out, "Our light will be lost. The temple will soon become dark once again." And then a miracle happened. A blessing came to us. The light of the lamp kept burning, and it burned for 8 days until more oil could be made, and the lamp could keep burning, and the light was not lost. And now, every Jewish home has its own special lamp. And they bless it, and they light it, and they remember that time long ago. The grandfather kisses Jacob and Rachel. He says, "That's the story my grandfather told me. I told it to you the same way that he told me." And Rachel says, "Yeah, and after the story, Grandpa, did you get to eat potato latkes? Did you get to spin wooden dreidels? Did you get Hanukkah gelt?" Jacob says, "And did you get to tell stories? Did you get to stay up really late?" "Oh, yeah, yeah, just like you will today. We ate potato latkes, we played with wood dreidels, we got Hanukkah gelt, we told jokes until we were so tired our parents had to carry us up to bed. And did you keep your lamp in the window for everyone to see?" they asked. "No, no." And he turns away. "No, we didn't. We didn't keep our lamp in the window because we were afraid." And Grandpa looks at the light of the Hanukkah. And Grandma stands beside him, touching his hand. And he says, "I will tell you the story of myself as a boy and the story of our family. It began during Hanukkah, many years ago." And once again, the family grows quiet. They sit close and listen. And they listen to their grandfather tell the story of his childhood as a boy. Many years ago, 60 years ago, many Jews lived in Europe. And then again, another man came with an army of soldiers. They destroyed many temples and schools and homes. They hurt many people, especially the Jews. When Hanukkah came, we were afraid. Afraid to put our Hanukkah in the window. Afraid to bless it and light it. Afraid someone would see it and say we were Jews. So we kept our light hidden. We kept our curtains drawn shut. And as soon as we could, we escaped out of Europe, but we had to leave everything, even our Hanukkah. Well, years later, many nations gathered together. They gathered a great army to set everyone free, and I was old enough, I joined them as a soldier. And I tried to be brave like those old Maccabees. And we fought and we kept fighting year after year until finally that man and his army was defeated. And all nations had peace once again. And I returned to the town where my family once lived. And I walked through the streets. And the streets were all empty. And I came to my home. And it was broken and burned. And I looked everywhere and I found only ruins. And I broke down and I cried over all that was lost. And then a miracle happened. A blessing came to me. The wind blew the ashes that lay at my feet, and I saw a little silver nest. It was freed from the ashes. It was shining in the sun, and I uncovered more nests. They were attached to silver branches. I uncovered the branches. They were attached to a silver knotted trunk. I pulled it out and discovered a lion guarding the roots. I raised it out and I shouted, "Our Hanukkah!" And now every year since then, I clean it and I polish it and I put it in the window for everyone to see, because I am no longer afraid. And Grandma said, and I shut the lights all through the house. And Jacob, he lights the shamash candle, and he hands it to Rachel. And Rachel says the blessings. And she lights the first candle for the first night of Hanukkah, and everyone says Amen. And Rachel tells her grandfather, "Someday, when I have children, I will tell them these two stories of Hanukkah, the story of our people and the story of our family, as we gather by the Hanukkah light." Stand. So it's okay to shift. I have one last story for those who want to hear it. And then I'll be signing over there. This story is about a dream. And it's an old story. I don't know if you'll recognize it. It's a pretty solidly remembered story that I've kept shaping and reshaping because I love it so much. It is a traditional story. And of course it has no official name. I call it Jacob Dreams. Jacob Dreams of a Treasure. And of course I give it my way of telling it. And this is the story of Jacob. Jacob is a young man, and he is a young man who is very poor. But he does not care that he's poor. It means nothing to him. All he cares about is learning. He wants to learn, but he has a problem. He is so poor, he has to work and work and work, even for the smallest amount. And so he's caught in this problem. If he stops working, and sometimes he stops working so he can learn, he becomes so poor he doesn't even have food to eat. And so he goes terribly hungry. But if he stops learning and he works so he can have food, then he can't learn anymore and he becomes terribly hungry for knowledge. So Jacob is either hungry in the body or hungry in the spirit. And then things take a turn even worse. He loses his work. He cannot find any more work, and he gets hungrier and poorer until finally he's forced to sell the few books that he has. And even poorer still until he can't even afford wood for the fire to keep warm. And so he curls up beside the cold fireplace in his small house, and he says, "I have nothing in this world. Maybe I can dream. If I can dream, at least maybe I'll find something in the world of dreams." And so he falls asleep and he finds a dream. He finds a wonderful dream. He dreams he is walking beside a river and he comes to a beautiful white bridge. And as he walks onto the bridge, there is a statue of an eagle. Its wings are spread as if it's going to rise up to heaven. And as he looks up at that eagle, suddenly in his hands is a treasure. A treasure so great that he can spend the rest of his life learning. Ah, when he wakes up from that dream, he says, "What a wonderful dream. I must find that bridge." And so he begins to walk. He leaves his little village on the hill. He walks to the river, and he begins to walk from one place to another. He comes to a bridge, a wooden bridge, a brown wooden bridge, no. He keeps walking. He comes to another bridge, a red bridge, made of bricks, no. And then finally he comes to a beautiful white marble bridge, a bridge in the city of Krakow. And sure enough, he can see. He can see as he approaches the bridge that beautiful eagle of his dreams. And so he stands beneath the eagle and he waits. He waits to be given his treasure. And there's people passing everywhere. Anyone could give it to him, but no one does. And so he waits all day. And then finally at night he sleeps beneath the bridge. And the next day he stands by the eagle waiting. Still, no one brings him anything. And the third day, weak from hunger, he still waits, knowing he cannot last much longer, and still there is nothing. He hears a soldier. The soldier who's been guarding by the eagle. "You, what have you been waiting here for 3 days?" says the soldier. I had a dream," said Yakov. "A dream. I dreamt if I would stand here, someone would give me a treasure." "A treasure. A treasure from a dream. Look, if you're hungry, you have a dream of food. You wake up. Will that dream food fill your gut? No. No. All right, if you're cold, you have a dream of a coat, a warm coat, and you wake up. Will that dream coat keep you warm? No. All right. You're poor. I can see you're poor. You dream of money. You dream of money and you wake up. Can you spend your dream money? No, not in this world, says Yakov. Well, wake up, you fool. Wake up. This is the real world. Dreams mean nothing. Do you see me dreaming? Ha, ha. Can you imagine me following dreams? And he looks at the soldier. The soldier has a big sword, a gun. He has a steel helmet. He has a braid of brass buttons and a great thick uniform. No, said Yakov, you wouldn't dream. You're right, I wouldn't dream. I don't follow dreams, I follow orders. And I'm ordered to be on this bridge and to guard it. And I will not leave my orders for anything. I do nothing but guard this bridge. Don't you ever dream, said Yakov. Once I had a dream. A stupid dream got through. Yeah, one dream. I dreamt I was walking down a river. I came to some village, a lousy little village. And I walked into some place with a bright blue door. And, oh, there was nothing even in it. Just an empty fireplace. I kicked it. Oh, and I kicked this fireplace. And a stone comes loose. Pull out the stone, there's a bag full of diamonds. Can you imagine? Do you think I'm going to leave my orders and follow a stupid dream? Now you get out of here. Get out. And Yakov leaves. He leaves terribly sad, walking back towards his home, saying, "Dreams, dreams. Maybe he's right. He's almost feverish by now from hunger. Dreams. Why, I've been caught in dreams." And he comes back to his village in the hills, and he walks back home through that village till he comes to his little poor house with its bright blue door. Its bright blue door. And he walks in, and he sees the stone fireplace, and he kicks it. He kicks the fireplace, and a stone comes loose. A stone comes loose, and he pulls the stone, and there it is. There is that bag of diamonds. He says, my dream, it was true. Only it led me to that soldier who gave me another dream. The dream that told me of a treasure that was waiting for me where I lived, waiting for me all this time. And Yaakov took his treasure, and he built a wonderful home full of books, a public home, a study house, where everyone could come and take shelter and read and learn. And everyone came, and they called this home a name. They gave it the name of Yaakov's Dream Come True. May your dreams come true.